This episode is brought to you by HH Bespoke Spirits, a fashionable portfolio of unique spirits, including bespoke gin, rum, and vodka, inspired by the rich cultural history and distinctive style of the Harlem Renaissance. Learn more at hhbespokespirits.com.
This week on Meetin' 3, we bring you stories about how Gen Z is different from their millennial predecessors through the lens of food.
My knowledge of alcohol didn't really come from like Bud Light commercials or like Project X.
Yeah, and that's my gripe with the platform as well, is that all these DIY videos, cooking videos, they're 20 seconds.
What's one food item from your childhood that you wish you could have today? Dunkaroos, because they don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. Although, the Dunkaroos Twitter was activated again a year ago, so it's only a matter of time. They've tweeted a couple times, it's pretty hype.
Listen to Meetin' 3, HRN's food news and storytelling roundup wherever you get your podcasts.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
And my name is Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Hey, fellas. Greg, you sound...
Hey, everybody.
You sound further away than normal. Where are you?
I'm killing it today. I am up in the Finger Lakes. I finally came to my senses and was like, you know what? It's weird. I didn't realize it was summer, and I feel like I'm not alone in this, of just kind of like my mental calendar being stuck somewhere in mid-spring. So I kind of was like, holy shit, it's August. I've been to the beach once, twice if you count the time I got there just in time to watch the thunderstorms rolling in off the ocean. I haven't really done much, so I finally, you know, did the smart thing and got the hell out of Brooklyn. And right before this, I was enjoying a lovely late morning, early afternoon gin and tonic on the dock, and that's probably what I'll be doing after this.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow, that smokes everything I've got going.
Souther, did you find a new place yet? You were talking about
No, I've been looking around. I will say that we were speaking off air, and you know, I have to move out of my apartment because I can't justify living here with the salary that I'm going to be taking in for the foreseeable future. So, you know, I made the sort of business decision to move out of the apartment that I've been in for a while. But I will say this.
The one where you almost lost your hand, right?
No. I've been out of that one for a while. Come on. It was just a finger. Don't over exaggerate. Come on. But I will say this, I've been looking periodically, and my most recent search for apartments has shown that there has now suddenly been a dramatic drop in rental prices. So yeah, I'm looking to move. I'm looking for an apartment with an outdoor space, which frankly will probably mean that I'll end up paying the same that I currently pay, but that amenity will be, you know, will kind of abate the fact that I'm probably not going to be going out. So I'll hopefully have a space to kind of grill, or maybe even invite other people over, and you know, have some social interaction within my apartment. But, nice. But yeah, I've got to move out of the place that I live for sure by November.
Oh wow! Okay, well, you got a little bit of time. Not bad.
And speaking of domiciles, just last week you had not one, not two, but three trees fall on your new house.
Oh yeah, what happened? I mean, you're talking about the rents being pretty good in New York right now. I'm like, oh, maybe it's a sign that I should move back. But
that's not the sign the universe gave you.
Right. Well, yeah. So almost died last Tuesday night. The house I just moved into, it's this mid-century modern house in Fairfax, California. Been there since 1954. And basically what happened was, like, they built the house around these three giant oak trees. I can't imagine how big they were back then, but they're gigantic. Well, they were gigantic until they were cut down from emergency workers having to, you know, respond to this call. Basically, like around midnight-ish on Tuesday night, I just put in my AirPods, my noise-canceling headphones, and I was listening to some music, and all of a sudden... the guitars were a little bit more loud and distorted, and the drums were heavier, and I realized, holy shit, this like 200 foot tall, like 200 year old oak tree had fallen, one of the upper branches, like, which is basically the size of a tree, a normal size tree, had broken off randomly. It wasn't dead or anything, broken off, fallen, took down two other oak trees on its way down, and they crushed the master bedroom, the carport, the garage. Luckily, everyone was okay. My brother and Carrie were in the master bedroom. And, if those other two oak trees hadn't been there to break the fall of the biggest one, then who knows what, I probably wouldn't be here. But everyone's okay. All the classic cars, all the Harleys, they made it safely. The only thing that...
The guitars, Damon, the guitars.
The guitars are all in the studio. Okay. The only thing that really, other than the house being, the front of the house being crushed, the only thing that really took a hit was my sister-in-law's 10-year-old Volkswagen Jetta, which she was planning on getting a new car anyway. And, so that got totaled. And so, now she's got some insurance money. Hey, I'm always the silver lining guy, right?
I was about to say, bring on the bright side. I know there is one.
And so, I'm staying at my girlfriend's place right now and, spending a lot of time with her. And it's great. It's a test run for us because we're planning on getting a place of our own and moving in together. So, yeah, all good stuff, man. I mean, as good as it can be out of that situation. it's been really nice. Neighbors have been coming by with bottles of booze and gift cards to grocery stores and restaurants around the neighborhood. And I'm like, well, great. I don't have anywhere to cook the groceries, but I know that they also have booze there. So that, it's been good. I've had a couple other people send me bottles. So I've got a great full bar right now, but it's all in my, my ice chest, in my bag. Wherever I end up, I've got some nice gifts. So thanks to everyone who's sent me some nice. nice things.
I mean, you sent us some photos last week, and I'm really shocked to see the damage that it did, and I'm very happy that, of course, all of you are safe.
Yeah.
And that there is some silver linings. That insurance is going to help your sister-in-law get a new car that she was already planning to get. Well, that insurance on the place is going to help you remodel what you were already planning to do.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like.
Exactly.
A little bit of
I mean,
weirdly serendipitous.
Yeah, I mean, they were already going to have
one
to do
might
some
one
stuff.
Might think it was planned.
I was going to say, man, the timing's
the oak tree
suspicious.
Only hit the Jetta, you say?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they were already planning on remodeling and doing a bunch of stuff to it, so this is actually going to help. They're going to have to do some foundation work, but now, of course, if a giant oak tree falls on your property, you can't really be I don't know, They can't be the foundation was a problem before, so you got to deal with it. It's you got to really have to do everything. You can't do any renovation work or any kind of rebuilding on a broken foundation. So, So I don't know. It's that movie, The Money Pit. It's kind of like that, but positive
that's,
way.
That's what I modeled. That's what I modeled my bar after that movie.
I think we all have, right? But, everyone's okay, so that's good. And, I was thinking about that, too. I could always, I guess I could road trip back to New York. Because if I fly back there, I got to do the quarantine for 14 days. I guess I could sneak by if I, and I'm all about the road trip right now. I think a lot of people have been doing a lot of road tripping anyway, because it's kind of the only safe way to get out there. So.
Yeah, I'm following Wayne Curtis's stories on his Instagram. He's traveling from the West Coast to the East Coast with his niece, and it's pretty fascinating to watch. I don't know what's going on right now here, though. Are we escaped from New York, or are we escaped to New York? Which way
exactly.
Are we going right now?
Yeah, it's seems escape like it's to. I can drink in a parking lot anywhere, but but I do miss New York. So
yeah. Greg, who we got in the virtual studio with us today so we can get this show on the road?
Well, speaking of New York, we have two folks who have been involved in a couple projects you might have heard of throughout the city over the years. Pegu Club, Clover Club, Leyenda. Joining us, we have Julie Reiner and Tom Macy, and they're going to talk about a new project they've got in the work called Social Hour Cocktails. What is going on, you two? How are you?
Hi there.
Hi.
Hey, welcome back to the show, y'all.
Thanks, Damon. Thanks, Souther. Yeah, it's nice to hear your voices.
It really is.
Likewise.
It's, we've been doing this now for several months at this point, where we're doing it remotely, and it's a little bit more awkward than being in studio where we can see each other, but yes, it's very nice to hear your voices.
That's relative,
I haven't seen either one of you in months.
I find it awkward looking across the table at the studio at you every week, Souther, so I don't know. This is better to me.
At least I had a shirt on.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Well, guys, I guess the first thing I would ask, you know, is describe a little bit about what's going on with your bars during the pandemic. Like, how are you coping with all of the, you know, restrictions and new things that pop up every day here to try and eke out some kind of business? I know we're all struggling.
Yeah, but we're all in the
trenches.
What's
going on with you guys?
It's been quite a roller coaster, to say the least. I know, Souther, I've seen, you know, you've been going through it as well. It's been challenging. I will say that, you know, this is something that I never saw coming ever, you know, and so I think in the very beginning it was just really shocking, you know, and we've just, and every 2 weeks it changes, you know, we opened for to-go cocktails and then, you know, and then we were able to, or we were selling to-go and bags, you know, and then we were able to put a table at the front door and we were doing cocktails in cups and then we were able to have some tables outside, you know, so we've just been kind of pivoting with what we're allowed to do and trying to, you know, bring in as much as we can to maintain our businesses. Thankfully, we're in a neighborhood that support, you know, that is, that there are people there and there are people working from home. And, you know, unlike a lot of the other bars, like in the city or financial district that who are really out of luck, we have people rooting for us in Carroll Gardens and Cobble Hill. So that's been great.
I was
talking to someone yesterday about who was walking around Manhattan and certainly Midtown, and just how it made me really appreciate what Julie just said, that there is a lot of support around here. So while it's tough, I think we're one of the lucky ones.
Yeah.
It's tough everywhere. You know, I've been doing a bit of delivery on my stupid little electric scooter, and when I get over into Brooklyn, it seems like a whole different world. You know, when I'm in Manhattan, it's very, you know, there's plenty of sidewalk cafes and parking lot cafes that are going on, but they're not nearly as bustling, or still there aren't as many people literally walking around on the streets as when I get into Brooklyn. I think there's a lot of people who bailed out. You know, they just jumped ship.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always funny to me. I always remember, like, you know, having customers come in to, like, Prime Meats back in the day and be like, oh, my God, what? This is crazy. This is the first time I've been to Brooklyn in, like, 70 years. And, like, why would anyone live here? And I'm like, why would you live in Manhattan? You know, like.
I know, yeah. It's so true. Yeah, and it's been, so it's been.
Good. Sorry, Souther.
In that sense, it's been good. It's also been really tough, you know. In the very beginning, when we first were able to do this, it was like the owner show. You know, Tom would come in one day and do all the batching, and then I would come in the next day and, you know, put all the cocktails in bags for the orders and organize the orders and then stand at the front door. And when people would walk up, I would grab their bag and set it on the table and then back up 6 feet and let them grab it, you know. It's crazy. And then once we were able to open, it was Tom and Christine and myself and KJ and Sue just kind of doing everything, and down to like waiting tables outside. So it's exhausting.
Speaking of silver linings, I said early on, obviously there's a few more staff now, but I said one of the only silver linings, like back in May, was that because I did all of the batching, was that my like sort of meticulous obsessive sensibilities, it was kind of satisfying to have made literally every cocktail in Clover Club for like 2 months. You know,
nice. It's quite a feat.
Yeah, that was just like, yes, these are all perfect, you know. other than that, we often say it's like, oh, we're opening our third restaurant in like 8 weeks, you know, because it's just a totally new format and new system. And
right.
Sometimes the system will change, you know, hours apart. Like I remember, I think it was maybe when we were opening, I call it the table bar, when it was the table right at the door, when people could just get cocktails to go. And we had this whole system set up. And then like on Friday night, at the end, Julie and I were like, this doesn't really make sense. We should do it this way, you know? And so like the whole day had been spent prepping for this table bar, and then we had to change it all for the next day. And it was the right call, but it was just, you're just making it up on the fly.
Yeah.
I feel like 100 days pass and it's 100 new businesses. Every single day is a brand new approach. How do you, well, how isn't the right word? Do you, is there sustainability to this? How long do you think you can continue in this current state of affairs?
You know, I mean, right now, I mean, we're maintaining for sure. We're lucky also in that our landlord has been very fair and has reduced our rent for the rest of the year, you know. So, you know, financially, the places should be able to sustain themselves. Who knows what's going to happen when it gets cold out. Right now, it's sort of like we know that we'll have tables outside through October. And but then what, you know? So I don't know. We'll see what happens November, December, January, February. You know, who can say? I don't know.
Yeah, so we were actually looking into for Grand Army, like looking into getting like because we set up our like. Luckily, we got lucky because State Street is part of the Safe Streets Initiative.
I saw that.
So, like, we basically have a full block of people will just, like, bring their lawn chairs out and blankets and stuff and, like, set up in the middle of the street, like, down the block and grab stuff from Grand Army. And it's like, all right, cool. That's great. Our patio section's a block long. But we were wondering about, like, what the legalities are with, like, putting a tent up and having, space heaters and stuff like that. Because I know, Souther, don't you have a tent up, kind of like a canopy over your tables?
I've got a canopy, and yeah, we've considered that, but again, it's just throwing maybe good money after bad at that point. You know, we don't necessarily think we're going to wind up paying for all the furniture that we already bought because we didn't have any of that.
Right.
We don't have tables and chairs and any of that stuff. And also to keep heat, you'd want to put, you know, some kind of, again, less than a canopy, more of a tent. You'd want to kind of have quote unquote walls, and that's the whole point of being outside. So,
right.
So I don't know if that's something we would even consider, even those sort of stand-up propane heaters there.
Well, you can't. So when we know this because at Leyenda, we actually bought propane heaters like in past years, and the fire department came and were like, no, you're not allowed to do that, and gave us a ticket, and you know, so it has to be electric if you do have heaters, in which case, you know, then you're running electric on the sidewalk out to your parking space, and I'm sure we'll get a ticket for putting something across the sidewalk. So you know, I don't know that that's going to be possible either, but you know, I mean, I know that for Tom and, you know, for all of us, like I have all these side hustles going to actually make money to support my family, you know, because Susan and I, both, all of our eggs are in the same basket, and we're not going to be able to pay ourselves out of the bars for the rest of the year. You know?
Yeah. Julie, I'm curing salmon and selling salmon on the side.
Yeah. I'm doing like Zoom cocktail classes. I'm now
sure.
a global brand ambassador. I had all of these irons in the fire back in like March and April when I was freaking out. And then they all came to fruition, and now I'm running around like an idiot, but that's good. I'm like, I'd rather that. Than the other situation of just going into debt over the course of the year.
Right.
Yeah, it's daunting, and it's definitely keeping me awake at night. The analogy that I've used over and over is that I feel like I'm trying to solve one of those giant, Einstein chalkboard problems, but there are several of the variables that are simply missing, but my brain won't stop trying to solve it, even though I don't have those numbers. So I'm getting no good rest or sleep. You know, I'm just constantly, you know, toggling between what could be and what might be and what goes on. Schools are probably going to reopen, and they're not going to, it doesn't look like they're going to allow restaurants to reopen, which I think seems, you know, strange. I'm not ready to reopen. I'm curious to know if you are, like, personally, I haven't really been, I've been to two places that do outdoor, and I've kind of like not had the greatest experience at either one. Not for any fault of theirs, for fault of my own. I'm not ready.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel? Are you ready to have people back inside? Are you ready to go back inside yourselves?
I'm not ready yet to have people back inside.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. It's even when,
glad,
you know,
when they postponed it. Yeah.
Yeah. When they did, you know, the date that they did have, we were like, I think we'll wait, you know, and then they postponed it from there, which we were thankful for. And even, you know, it's like Tom and I both have kids, you know, and my daughter's 11 and she's going into sixth grade, and we don't even know if we're going to actually send her to in-school learning, because we've talked with other parents, and, you know, and so many of them are just not sending their kids, you know? And I think that also I think the idea with the government was that it's sort of like either schools or restaurants, because they know that there's going to be a spike when one or the other reopens, and they chose schools.
they chose to throw the kids out front.
Exactly. I mean, kids, like, alcohol involved in school, so
right, which seems just patently madness to me. We're at a point where we should probably take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, but we're going to come right back and keep talking to Julie Reiner and Tom Macy about your pretty exciting new project, Social Hour Cocktails. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
This episode is brought to you by HH Bespoke Spirits, a fashionable portfolio of unique spirits, including bespoke gin, rum, and vodka. The family behind the award-winning boutique and clothing brand Harlem Haberdashery has expanded to distill spirits inspired by the rich cultural history and distinctive style of the Harlem Renaissance. The Black and family-owned HH Bespoke Spirits are available at bars, restaurants, and retailers across the United States. Learn more at hhbespokespirits.com and follow them at hhbespokespirit.
And we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. In the studio today, we have Julie Reiner and Tom Macy, and we were just talking about the current woes of bar and restaurant ownership and what we're doing to kind of like navigate the current weather in this case. There's a lot of interesting so you were saying before the break that you feel like you've got this giant chalkboard and you're trying to do this huge problem without a lot of the variables plugged in, but you know, I kind of find it exciting. I mean, like, I hate to be like the silver lining guy on this.
I love how you do this to me every time.
It's kind of fun. I'm like, it reminds me. Okay, so
I'm like, doom and gloom. You are positivity, yeah. And Greg is color commentary. Greg just calls the plays.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, like, it's, I think the most, like, one of the most fun things about owning a bar, running a bar, is opening the bar and, you know, like, putting it together and figuring it out and like getting it open. And this feels like someone said, like, before the break, kind of feels like you've kind of opened up like several different businesses, like, you know, week to week, day to day, sometimes hour to hour. And I know, it's just like kind of making it work. Grand Army's not, you know, thinking about it, because we closed for a couple of months to try to figure out what we were going to do. But I can't say that we reopened Grand Army. We just opened up a different business altogether with some of the similar bones, you know. And I don't know, it's just kind of interesting. I think, especially in New York City, that's kind of, that becomes instilled in you, you know? Like, that's the New York hustle is very real, and, like, you are kind of forced to find a way, not just in, like, business ownership and management, but, like, just in any kind of day-to-day thing, you know? Trying to figure out how to get from point A to point B. Is there, like, you know, like, is there an easier way, a better way to do this? Probably not, but you find the way to do it, you know? So I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely right, Damon. There are some parts of this that I consider challenging, and in that sort of way that's exciting and keeps you moving forward. But at the same time, there are parts of this where I think this isn't a challenge; it's a hardship, and we're all having to face it,
exactly,
whether we want to or
I'm
not.
I'm just here for the positivity, man. Yeah, man.
You two are the yin to the yang for real.
Yeah, man.
I fucking love you.
I'm wearing tie dye pajamas right now. Okay. If that tells you anything.
Of course you are.
And so they're used to wearing the shirt that says "Fuck it, let's drink."
Yeah, fuck this, let's get drunk. Yeah, fuck this shit, let's get drunk. Listen, so speaking of getting drunk, or at least catching a nice buzz, Tom and Julie, you guys have been working on a project for years, kind of under the radar, and man, what a great time to bring it to fruition.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Social Hour Cocktails is now your RTD, ready-to-drink cocktail line that you've put out. Let's talk about that. What was it like being in R&D, and how did it get to market, and where can we pick them up?
So 7 years ago or so, I was tinkering around with the gin and tonic recipe and, you know, trying to isolate all the best ways to make one, carbonation, ratio, getting the gin cold, and I just sort of realized, like, why can't I just get this already pre-mixed? Like, it seems like it would be a no-brainer, you know? And then that was kind of the spark that led me down this whole rabbit hole of, you know, just like one step after the other, I would ask people questions and be like, have you ever thought about this or what about that? And a lot of times people are like, nah, that's not possible. But, you know, we just kept finding little ways to clear these hurdles. And then about, I guess, 3 years ago or so, I talked to Alan Katz at the New York Distilling Company, who makes rye, whiskey, and gin. And I just kind of floated the idea, which it had kind of crystallized at that point, of doing, you know, carbonated highball style cocktails like a gin and tonic or a Paloma or a whiskey ginger. And he was like, yeah, that's, you know, let's talk about it. And I remember him saying, though, it's like, I will say that people come to us all the time with projects or ideas to either use their space or use their products or collaborate. And I can't remember the number, but it was a lot. And he was like, you know, only one of them has made it to market. And like one maybe is going to come to you later this year. And it kind of made me realize, like, oh, they think this is going to be a lot harder than
we lost.
Yeah, because Aisha and Tyler.
We got into real R&D from there, and it was, we can talk more about it, but I'll just say that it was a very arduous process to get them perfect. And we wanted them to be as good as a cocktail that we would put on our menu at Clover Club. So the bar was very high, and, you know, it was like learning a new way to make a cocktail. I mean, you'd think, yeah, gin and tonic, that should be a slam dunk, but it's a whole new set of tools. I sort of feel like it's like, not quite like learning to learn speak a new language, but it's like speaking the new language, but all the words are spelled differently. You know, like usually when we make a cocktail, it's like, oh, this just needs a little more simple syrup, or this needs a dash of bitters. But like that's not how you do R&D for this type of thing. So we did all that. We got through it. Go ahead.
I'm kind of fascinated by the notion of the scaling of a thing, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's kind of what you're alluding to when you say, you know, it's not just a matter of adding a little bit more simple syrup or what have you. It's the fact that you're thinking, well, this isn't a cocktail. This isn't even a batch of cocktails. This is 10,000 cocktails.
Yeah.
I don't know. How does that factor in? I'm sure you have experts that you're working with once you get to that level, but like I can't even wrap my mind around it.
Well, I will just say quickly, like, on it, and we haven't gotten to a huge scale point, so I'm sure this is naive of me to say, but it feels like that's maybe not the easiest part, but it's not the hardest part, because it's a formula, a recipe that is easy to replicate. That's why we wanted to do it, because we're using shelf stable things. We're not making lime juice. You know, Julie and I talked, we're never going to do something where we would compromise the quality of an ingredient, like citrus juice. So for the most part, it's a spirit, and we have our sugar and our acids and our natural flavors, and all meticulously dialed in to the exact, you know, amount. And those can scale fairly easily, whether you do 1,000 gallons or 10,000 gallons. The hard part is, you know, you got to sell them, and oh, there's a whole bunch of other stuff there, but it can scale. You just got to set up the mechanism to do it. And those exist, you know?
Right. Well, there are people out there who've been doing this for, you know, for a long time. And so I'm sure you reach out to them. How do you get in touch with those folks? What are those processes? Like, how did you go from cocktail napkin idea to perfecting the drink to who's going to can this thing or whatever?
I'm trying to be brief.
Keep it simple.
I mean, it's a talk show. We could talk.
No, don't give me an opening. I mean, so...
We call it getting canned when you walk in and Tom starts talking to you about our cans. It's like, oh, this has been like years in the process. And Tom really, really took the lead on the development. And, you know, he and I did a lot of the tasting of various, you know, we did so many different variations on the gin and tonic and the whiskey mule to get it exactly where we wanted, where we're raising the ABV or we're adding a little bit more of a citrus note to it because we wanted
the spritz. Oh my God, the spritz.
And the spritz. And we wanted it, the spritz was the hardest one, but we wanted it to be delicious out of the can or poured over ice. So if you're at the beach, you know, you crack open the spritz or the gin and tonic and it has enough acidity that you're not like, oh, I wish I could pour this over ice and put a lime on it. It needed to be perfect out of the can too, but yeah. Tom. So you'd walk in and Tom would like, it would be like a 40 minute
phrase yet.
Yeah. Getting, we'd come home and be like, oh, I got canned by Tom. Yeah.
This makes it sound like I'm like hiding behind the bar and I'm just like, ha ha, there's nowhere for you to go. You have to talk to the, about this now. Which is kind of like not that far from the truth. I mean, yeah, no, it's like I especially once we got into the, so basically Alan put us in touch with a number of flavor houses, which, you know, do a wide variety of products, and they are just these massive companies that, and I had no idea going into it. I had my first conversation with a representative that I was talking to, just this major high up person, and I was essentially pitching the project, and I was being, anyway, I had no idea how high the stakes were, which is probably good. But they agreed to work with us on this project, and they appointed this project manager, this guy who really became like this father figure, because they basically appoint this guy to help these small businesses not just to develop their products, but navigate all, you know, production, and just puts you in touch with people about distribution and all kinds of things. And I learned a lot through that, and I started, you know, I learned what I was doing was, you know, starting a business, and that I was an entrepreneur, which I don't think had crystallized. And so to that point, I just thought I was making cocktails. And so I started listening to, you know, more podcasts about business, and I just, it lit this crazy fire that I just thought about it all the time for, you know, every day for however long it took. And that's why I would ambush people, you know, at work, because I was having these conversations with myself all day long. But I mean, yeah, you know, it's kind of like the bar industry. It's where you meet people, you talk to them, and you tell them what you're thinking about, what you're working on, and you have a conversation. Then they'll be like, you should talk to this person. And then it just kind of leads, you know, some things lead to something else. And you just, it's about filling out all the blanks.
The other thing I would add to that too, is that, you know, early on, like we saw some canned cocktails and we bought them because we wanted to, we were like, oh, let's see what people are doing. And we realized that most of the ones that had juice in them were pretty terrible, because they, you know, what they have to do to put lime juice or mint or, you know, and we're like, oh, this is awful. Or it's just not as good as what you could make on your bar. You know, there was that. Or the ones that were like gin and tonics or, you know, vodka sodas or whatever, the ratios are completely off on these drinks. You know, they're making them in 12-ounce cans, and if you do the math on it, it's like, you know, you look at the ABV and it's like an ounce and a half or 2 ounces of the spirit, and then 10 ounces of club soda or 10 ounces of tonic. That's not a gin and tonic, you know. So you know, we were just like, we can do this so much better. And that was, you know, the other catalyst.
And So, as Julie has said, it's like, we thought we could do it better. But yeah, the can size, and anyway, you know, carbonation, and there's tons of problems to solve. And sometimes they end up being bigger ones, or more obvious answers. But
the thing that's always gotten me about this is, like, I've been a spirits judge for the WSWAs in like Vegas and in New York, and I think once in San Francisco. And I know Julie's done that a bunch too.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sounds like a really cool job. You know, like, you wake up early and you're like judging all these spirits and a bunch of different categories, you know, and everyone gets like, there's like the two that you're like, oh crap. Like, the first things you have to taste are like vodkas and like typically like flavored vodkas. And then, like, at the end of the day, like, you just want to get out of there. You have like palate fatigue. All you want to do is just like crush a beer. And, but then, like, at the end of the day, like, they throw, everyone has to judge the RTD category, and like, and it's like always the worst because of what you just said, you know, like, there, these things have, like Souther said, these things have existed for quite some time now, but one's like really dialed them in. And I, you know, that's because like all these companies that have done it have just done it because they saw an opportunity, but you got to trust bartenders to make these drinks.
Yeah, it looks like they're leading with convenience instead of leading with taste.
That's exactly. Like one part of the puzzle, and they're like, oh, people will buy this because they don't have to make the drink themselves, or they can have it anywhere, and they don't think about filling out the other side of it. And yeah, now the category is growing, but as we remark a lot, like, a lot of them, and because this is how it has to be done, you have to have a license to produce spirits. You can't just buy a bottle at the liquor store and then like batch a cocktail and then sell it at a different liquor store. You know what I mean? That's not legal. You need a license to produce spirits. So most of the RTDs are made by spirits producers. And some of them may be great at making spirits, but that they know how to do that. They don't make cocktails. And as we all know, it takes a long time to really perfect it, to get good at it, or know how to troubleshoot a cocktail, you know? And I think that that's something that we're hoping will make a difference with our product is that, you know, we've been obsessing about perfecting cocktail recipes for decades. That's what we do. And not many companies out there have that background.
Yeah, agreed. You touched a little bit on legality issues. What are the legality issues between, you know, I'm an owner of a bar as well, and you guys own a bar. How does that work between owning a bar and selling a product?
Tom and I are not owners at the Clover Club. Our spouses own the Clover Club in Leander. Uh-huh.
Good old loopholes.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
So that's what we'll say about that.
Yeah.
Fair enough. We'll let that one lie then.
Yes. We run the Clover Club, but... My lawyer said, just don't forget birthdays and anniversaries.
Right.
Nice.
Keep it tight.
Yeah.
That's great. When did, because it launched during all of this, and I feel like time is in this crazy state of flux at all points. What was the date that you finally launched this years-long process?
We were actually supposed to launch in April, which obviously we ended up losing some of our funding because some of the people that invested were bar industry people who then were like, oh, I can't invest in this anymore.
We finished our pitch deck at like the end of February. Like, you know, a lot of the plan was, hotels, sporting arenas, you know, airplanes, you know, like that. And that was all in the deck. And then all of a sudden it was like, this isn't going to work. So we sort of went.
Right, you're like a cooler down on the beach. Right. I'm going to sell it out of those.
Right.
That's by yourself.
Yeah, you can sell it, right. Exactly. You can drink it alone. It was a little more of friends and family, to be honest. I mean, I had a group of high school friends that I'm on this text thread with kind of randomly. And
you mean old high school friends?
Not current high school students. everyone was talking and frankly pretty scared about everything, and I was like about this, they were looking at the stock market and talking about that, and I was joking, I was like, hey, who wants to invest in a cocktail company, kind of joking, because I was just like, I mean, it was really crushing because we had, you know, as I just said, just worked so hard to get to this point. I just felt like, you know, I often want to say Sisyphus, but I don't want to say Sisyphus because he never's done with his work. He never gets that boulder over the hill. But like, it just felt like it was never-ending work to get this thing launched. And then the pandemic happened, and I was like, I can't believe this. This whole thing is going up in smoke. Anyway, these guys rallied around and chipped in some money, and we were able to get enough to get moving on our first run. And it slowed things down, but we were able to launch by August 1st. Julie and I started hitting the streets, and I mean, you can't sell door to door anymore. You can't just cold call people. So it's setting up appointments with liquor stores. We're mainly looking at liquor stores right now because the category is exploding a lot, you know. So that right now there's a few spots in Brooklyn that we're carried at, and we've got some samples out to others. I just dropped two more off right before we started talking today, and yeah, that's how we're going about it so far.
Are you, since all that kind of happened and you had people back out and you got some new people to get on board, did you get back up to the funding you were looking for? Are you still seeking out investors, or how's that part working?
We did. We got back up to where we needed to be to launch. And the idea is that we're going to launch. We're launching in New York, New Jersey right now. And then, you know, and getting the word out and getting the cans in people's hands so that we can have people taste them. We think they're the best ones on the market. And then we'll do a much bigger raise to try to go, you know, go all go over big. The United States. Go yeah. big or go home, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. yeah. And it's nice to be able to focus on something that we can actually grow in the current, you know, situation, because the bars are, as you know, as we were saying, it's kind of a depressing state right
oh,
now.
Oh yeah. I mean, as we've said, the early days in March and April, if it was really good to have social hour as a something, even though it wasn't going exactly how we hoped, to hold on to keep working on. It was definitely good to have that.
Yeah, well, I actually want to ask a quick question about the name now that you've said it again, because I have to be honest, I had to check myself. I almost called them social distancing cocktails by accident when I introduced you guys.
Just because
that's been such a big term that's out there, and I think you said this off the break. It seems like a little bit that because of everything that's going on, the ball is bouncing a little bit your way. Do you think, with everyone being conscious about social distancing and rethinking what it means to be social in general, that that's actually been a little bit of a lucky break for you guys?
Maybe. I mean, at first, I definitely was like, right when social distancing because it became like starting being part of the zeitgeist, I was like, this is really bad. Like, you know, this is our whole project.
Hey, you don't have it as bad as a certain beer company.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. But yeah, I was like, no, like social, everything is going to be something everyone hates and it's going to be the associate. But yeah, once it became part of this cultural sort of, whether we like it or not, this cultural movement of how we conduct ourselves, I think it speaks to it. And, you know, the short answer is social hour is what my family has always called cocktail hour. And at family gatherings, it's time for social hour. And so my grandparents always used. And so I have been using social. I had a website, like a blog, essentially, for a couple of years. It was called Social Hour. And it really encapsulated how I felt about cocktails and their value. It's like what I wanted to put out into the cocktail world, like personally. So when we were batting names around a year or two ago, it was sort of like, well, what about the name of your website? It just seemed to really, say exactly what we wanted to say. So we were going with that, and then this all happened. And so it's been very surreal, but I do think it still works. It still works, and you know, in the social distancing world, you can still do social hour, and you can do it remotely. You know, it's all about just connect the cocktail's ability to connect people, which is something we really value about running bars, you know, and something we love about it. So it still works on
totally,
two levels, I think.
Yeah. And I've personally been saying since the beginning that I think social distancing is bad branding. I always think it should have been physical distancing, because we're having to, you know, rethink, you know, you can be physically distant, but socially close to people
totally.
In ways that aren't, you know, exactly what we're used to, certainly not what we would like, but it's still possible and necessary to connect with people in a way. And I think it's good to have,
absolutely.
You know, that image of what it means to be social out there.
Right. That's a good point. I haven't thought of that. Because you're right. It's like they're not saying don't socialize, you know, they're just saying do it from a distance.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I agree with Greg. I've been on the phone with more of my friends from both here in New York and all over the country and world more in the past 5 months than I probably have in the past 5 years.
Yeah.
So I feel like in an odd way, I've been socially closer to my friends over this time than I have been in normal times.
Yeah.
I just pulled up your website right here, Social Hour. Welcome to the new craft cocktail revolution.
Yeah.
Barstool optional. I love that. And I'm looking at the cans themselves. They're beautiful. Who designed them, and who kind of came up with these designs?
This guy, a company called Ebbing Branding, started by this guy, Matt Ebbing. And that's, you know, that's the whole podcast in and of itself. It's like, which I will not take you on. But basically, yeah, it was kind of like, oh, right, we got to figure out how these are going to look. I mean, we, you know, we're not, obviously the cocktails were the most important thing to us, how good that they tasted perfect. But, you know, we're not oblivious to the fact that these things needed to look great too, and you know, the goal has always been a great product and a great package. So, you know, I was just looking around online on Pinterest, you know, you'd find a product that you really like, sometimes you plug that into Pinterest, see what comes up, sometimes you could Google, you know, the product and find the company that actually designed it. And in the case with Matt, you know, I found him, it wasn't a product that he had done, but I liked what I saw. I stumbled across it, and we got on the phone. He was the first person I talked to. So, you know, every stage of this project has been like, well, I've never done this before. Have no idea what I'm doing, you know? And that was the same with that. I'm like, I have no idea how to interview a designer, you know, don't know what I'm asking for, but it just felt perfect right away. And maybe I was like, well, maybe they're all going to feel like this, but he just spoke about how the product needs to connect with people on an emotional level and not just have it look really great, but like, I guess not connect with people directly necessarily, but connect with how you feel about the product and what it means to you, what you want to put out into the world. It was all about, you know, the North Star of what you're trying to achieve. And so he helped us clarify that. I don't think we even had a name at that point. And then, you know, he came with five different, we worked with them, on a variety of things, but he came with five different options. And, Julie, Christine and Sue and I were all like, oh yeah, number five, which is very close to what it is now. Yeah. He just knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. And I, you know, early on too, I live in Park Slope and I started talking to some of the Park Slope moms that I know who buy, you know, rosé, you know, wine, and they buy canned wine and different canned cocktails. And I started sort of interviewing them and saying, so what made you choose this one? You know, why did you pick that one? And one of the number one things was they were like, it looked fun. You know, the packaging was fun and it looked like it was going to be delicious. And, you know, so, but the initial purchase was so very, very branding and packaging, forward, and that was sort of why they chose it. And then they take it home, and if they liked it, then they bought it over and over again. So, you know, we wanted to make sure that the cans didn't take themselves too, the design didn't take itself too seriously, that it looked like a good time, and, you know, was fun.
Yeah, I mean, to me,
yeah, I mean, Damon's hammered this notion into my head over the years. I still think I'm hard headed about it, but yeah, you know, Damon has a design background, and if they have no idea what's in the can, you got to get the can in their house and in their hand, so that's your only marketing ploy, can itself, the design is the marketing ploy.
It also looks like something you could grab. It like it looks fun, like Julie said, you know, and obviously we want to have fun. And if it's social hour, it goes with it. Yeah, but it also looks really clean, you know, like the color.
That's what I was going to say. They look real clean.
And also, like, you can kind of tell that it's done by, like, real cocktail people because it's got, like, some legit, like, I like the Brooklyn Bridge on it, but also I like that there's actual, like shakers and jiggers. I don't know how much you have to pay Greg Baum to use that imagery.
Hopefully he's not listening.
Baum like, gets his cut.
It's really that clean, guy, but also like
gets his cut.
The soft font, like the soft script font on the social hour, looks just like, it's like, all right, cool. This is like chill. We're gonna hang out. Yeah. My thing like with canned cocktails that I always have to ask is, when are the koozies gonna be made?
I've definitely done some my fair share of Googling on koozies. There's not a lot of the 8.4 ounce
the slim cans,
The slim cans. They have the slim cans for the 12 ounce, but but anyway, so we'll see.
We've
thought about it. We may have to engineer some of those.
As someone who has a lot of koozies made for Grand Army, I can definitely offer my assistance
let's talk.
On that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's a definite piece of swag that obviously matches right up to the product.
Yeah, for sure.
Damon. We gotta get you guys some samples also, so you can give them a try.
Oh yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah, I'll totally get on that. I've got them right in front of me. I was saying too, just I think the can, like, well, whatever. It's just like when you're designing these things, you know, you learn all about the different metrics. And what was nice was that, like, a third of the can is all the government-mandated stuff. And then there you have two more thirds. And so I think what they did that was really smart was that you say, like, there's one side that looks very clean and says what it is, what the brand is, what's in it. And then the other side is just, like, this big explosion of fun stuff with this is the Brooklyn Bridge and all that stuff. And I think that was, you know, that's all on Matt's team. It really helps to have, you know, you assembling a good team and not just thinking you can do it by yourself, which is a problem that I sometimes have.
I think that's a problem all of us in our business have, right? We're all very alpha, and we want to handle every part of it ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it's good when you can finally find those people to rely on and step away from some of those parts.
I think one of the harder things with the canned cocktails, that are out there is that a lot of the general public who aren't necessarily cocktail industry people, they don't understand what the difference is between malt and actual spirits. You know,
this is a huge debate. Yeah, huge
and
debate.
There's a lot of these, like, I've seen, like, you know, in Hawaii, I'm from Hawaii, you know, and you go into the ABC store and they have the canned cocktails that are there, and you'll see, like, where, you know, some of these brands will make, you know, canned cocktails, and it looks like it's a margarita, but it's actually malt beverage. There's no tequila in it at all. You know, and so I think educating the public on what they're actually buying is going to be mm-hmm. part of our process.
Yeah, I think that.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think the more the products that hit the market that are making that argument, I hope that will be a distinction that people start to make. But you're right. A lot of people probably don't realize that White Claw is essentially beer. They probably think it's a vodka soda, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, they absolutely do. And this is a debate we've talked about many times. And I wanted to bring this up in a casual way. And so here we go. What does that mean for price point of your product? Because you're using an actual spirit.
Great question.
A malt beverage. How do you keep it in that zone where people want to buy it? And then another question that's a little bit maybe out there: how many calories are in each can? Because I know this is a big thing that the consumer wants to know as well.
Well, with the price point thing, I mean, even if we were like, we're going to make White Claw but with vodka, same proof, same flavors, it's just going to have vodka but not be malt, and that's going to be our differentiation strategy. We'd have to charge $2 or $3 more a can purely on taxes alone. There's just no way to navigate that, to basically get down on that pricing level. So luckily that's not what we were trying to do. Ours was about making a great product first and then seeing where things landed. Obviously the economics were important, but we kind of let the process guide us there. So we're looking at about $5 a can and $20 for a 4-pack. So it's kind of carving out sort of an upper level niche in the RTD category, which we sort of think is underdeveloped. We think that there's room for a more premium type of RTD, and as people understand more the difference of why does this cost this and this cost that, that they'll understand why it's absolutely a great deal to have 4 cocktail bar quality craft cocktails, a round of 4 for $20.
You're not alone in jumping into that category at that level. You know, we've had Aaron Polsky on a few times. I'm sure you guys know that guy. He's got his launch just happened right kind of before all this nonsense as well with LiveWire drinks, and that's one of the hurdles he's having to try and overcome. Is again, the consumer simply isn't. I hate to call them out, but they're just not savvy enough to understand that. Like you said, I think the majority of the consumer thinks that a White Claw is a vodka soda, mm-hmm. and it's absolutely a beer.
Yeah.
It's engineered to taste like a vodka soda. Yeah. and so people can't get over their minds, like, why am I paying, you know, $2 for this canned cocktail and $5 for this one? And I'm sure that's a massive hurdle for you to overcome, but you've got name recognition. Hopefully that'll help.
Yeah. And what was the second? I'm sorry, Souther. What was the second part of your question? Your initial question?
Who knows?
It's more of a comment than a question.
Yeah. I mean, I just, it's just a.
Anyway,
you know, again, I'm the doom and gloom guy, so I'm thinking to myself, man, how do you convince someone that this is worth the price when they don't really even get that you're trying to say, I'm selling you either a gallon sized growler of beer or a gallon sized bottle of whiskey.
Well,
they don't see the difference.
I do think that part of it is people often talk about finding your niche. Well, it's two things. Dominate your backyard. So it's like people around Brooklyn, they do know Clover Club and they know Julie. So there is some name recognition there. So there's some value to be had there. Also it's that, you know, about, I think, finding your niche and really dominating it. I don't think that we're ever going to compete on the scale of White Claw in terms of how broadly appealing it is. I do think that there's a lot of people that, A, probably haven't come over to Spiked Seltzer because they don't think it's that great. And then the people that are like, Spiked Seltzer's not that great. That they understand, there are definitely people that understand the value of a great cocktail. And I, you know, we have, as we said, went to such lengths to make them genuinely cocktails you would get in a cocktail bar. I just don't think that really exists in a big way in the market right now. And I think that when people taste it, they'll be like, no, you don't understand. This is a totally different. Yes, it's definitely going to be about messaging. And I think that's a question we're asking ourselves now is how do we get the word out? You know, how do we let people know that these are here? We know that they're good. We know that they look cool. Now we have to lead people to them.
Well, you start by going on the
speaker. That's weekend. What I was going to say.
Thank you for letting us come on and dump all of our information.
Yeah. Well, speaking of dump all the information, where can people find you if they want to follow up, ask questions? You know, you got an Instagram you want to pimp or something we can put on the show notes for people to get in touch with you and see what the next steps are?
Absolutely. So we're on Instagram. It's @socialhourcocktails. We're on Twitter @drinksocialhour. I'm @mixtressnyc on all things. And then as far as where you can find us currently, we're available in Red Hook right now at Wet Whistle Wines. Corey over there is selling our stuff. We're also at Smith & Vine. You can come by Clover Club as well and purchase all three of the cocktails as well.
Yeah, Heights Chateau should be getting theirs tomorrow on Atlantic. I know I was just talking to Alan earlier that he I think either got them or is getting he's getting four cases of each for the Shanty tomorrow. And like I said, we have several, you know, pending, waiting to get the orders in. Like literally it's all still very early days. The Spritz literally like was cleared like this late morning to be shipped. They're like, we can't ship it. I'm like, it should clear. And then it did. So it's very much like at the moment, like moment to moment. And we're reaching out to more people every day. I wish we could say exactly when, but we are going to have the ability any day now to go to socialhourcocktails.com, which is our website, and there'll be a shop page on there where anyone in New York State, initially just New York State, can order it to be shipped anywhere in the state. And then you can order delivery to anywhere in Manhattan and Brooklyn through the website. We're just getting that set up as we speak, and so it should be any day now. Obviously, I'll let everybody know. That'll be great because, yeah, you know, it's hard for people to get places in normal times, and now obviously it's a challenge. So we're looking forward to sharing it with everybody. I know that there's definitely people that are interested.
Great. Well, guys, we are rushing right up to the end of this show. It's really great to have the both of you on and talk about everything that's going on with the bars and the pandemic, and also following up with Social Hour cocktails, which look amazing, and I can't wait to get one in my hands and in my face, frankly. You know, it's been hot and muggy and gross, and a frosty cold gin tonic cracked out of a can sounds like right up my alley. So love to get a hold of one.
We will send some over to you, and
we will.
Thank you so much for having us on the show.
Thank you.
I miss seeing your faces, Damon.
Likewise. Same. Yeah.
Damon Souther. Damon was always at Landa, and I really miss seeing you guys.
Oh man, me too.
Yeah.
Thanks. Soon enough. Thanks for letting me. Thanks for letting me can you guys for an
hour. The secret's out, Tom.
Yeah. I knew it. I knew you didn't want to talk about the cans.
All right.
You guys.
We've got a hard out today. So Damon, why don't you take us out, guys? Stay on the line so we can finish up the off the air stuff.
Cool. That's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this one, except not as fun. And click on the beating heart to donate to the station. Again, check out Social Hour Cocktails. Julie, Tom, I really miss you guys too. Can't wait to see your faces and can't wait to try your awesome new drinks. As always, you guys are the best cocktail people in the world. So I just can't wait. And until then, everyone, cheers.
Cheers, everybody. Thank you.
Cheers, everyone.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues, that's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. for our freshest content and learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.